Hello, everybody. We are live on our regular Monday stream. I will just double check that we are live on the other page. But yes,
We are indeed live.
we are indeed live. I always put a thing in the chat if people struggle to refresh. If you ever sat there for waiting for a stream to start, you need to refresh a lot of the time. But you can't hear me, all you non-refreshers. The non-refreshing class.
We are live currently on the post ramen hour as we sit here full of a hilarious amount of very good food.
We did eat quite a lot. We did make and eat quite a lot of ramen. Yeah, there was ramen consumed, and it was very good. But we got, I don't know, we've got a lot to cover, but we'll get the normal YouTube-y stuff out of the way.
Indeed, we shall.
We had a decent guest stream last week with Horus. If you missed that, do go and watch it. Obviously, after this, we are still monetized, so the best way to donate to us is still through Streamlabs. Although a lot of people do choose to use the membership function, which is the best way to support us on a recurring basis. But
You can also, if you are one of the few people who that so far support us on Substack.
yes, we do have a Substack link down below where our writing is. There'll be more of that at some point. I have a lot of incomplete stuff. That's like 80% of the way there, but I unfortunately need to do more reading with some of it. I'd rather
I'm
put.
sure I can help with those.
Yes. There's a Ram. God damn it. Bon appetit. But yes, you can do. But a lot of it as well is just like letting it sit, structuring it. Also, since.
Yes, men of the sun, ramen.
Ramen. Oh, that's pretty good. But yeah, there is some stuff I also think I don't. I have a lot of stuff in the tank as well that's nearly finished that I'd like to finish when it's slightly more timely. Because I'm sick of putting something out and then 3 or 4 months later, it being a lot more relevant than it was back then. But I don't know. Maybe that's just me wanting to try and get the most attention out of it. But it does sometimes fall a little bit flat if you're too far ahead
No,
of
I
the
think
curve.
we have to constantly be ahead of the curve because otherwise the curve would collapse and it would. So
I
the
suppose.
entire universe needs us to
You
state
were
what the
right.
next set of current events should be.
You were right about me adding the extra soy sauce, though. I'm completely soaked out now.
A
I feel like a prune. I feel like I've been cured by the salty.
very chickeny prune.
Yeah, I feel like I've been cured by the salty ramen. But as the title suggests, as I see Aurelian Nautilus Caesar, one of our members in the chat there, welcome. But as the title suggests, we're talking about the idea that you may or may not have seen, because it was quite widely publicized, of racism as a pandemic, which is very much, I think, part of the therapeutic state framework.
Yes, I mean, if this is the framework, if racism is a pandemic, I'm going to go back to calling it the Black Plague.
Yes, that's a banger. But we have done a kind of an intro stream about. Through actually, we used a Raytheon document.
No, it was the
Oh,
Rand.
with the Rand Corporation,
Yeah,
sorry, talking.
the depression headset, and I think it was the Internet of Bodies
Yes, but
document.
that was our previous stream about the therapeutic state. We'll be getting to some of the theory. We'll be repeating a little bit of that here because you have some good excerpts from Paul Gottfried's After Liberalism.
Yes.
But again, this will all be linked in the pinned comment if you're watching this on the recording. But we do have kind of a previous stream this all links back into, because we like to do that with a lot of our stuff. We
Yes.
developing a body of work, and as slightly gay as that sounds, I know. Should we just get right into it, because there is quite a lot to talk about
Yeah, I
here?
think we should probably get cracked.
We shall get cracking. The thing that really spurred this on, even though I've been collecting links about this for quite some time at this point, is the fact that I saw The Lancet, which is supposed to be a serious medical journal, or at least at one point it was supposed to be a serious medical.
You can't have an interplay between politics and medicines now, could you? Because that would mean people would get hurt.
Yes, it's one of the better examples of what Paul Gottfried refers to as. Did he coin the term, or?
No, I think it's more from Christopher Lash, but
Okay.
he sort of looks at it more as a linguistic feature of progressivism and social democracy, that it has this tendency to make I don't know, and sort of without ruining the bits toward the end and explaining something in a really roundabout way, you know, you try and implement social democracy on a population, they don't take to it, so you then must therapeutically adapt and mold the population so that it does suit the conditions of a social democracy. And one of the sort of core elements of that, especially as Gottfried sees it, is the notion of pluralism. You know, open society, civil rights, the notion that you must be tolerant of, you know, any and all things.
Yes.
Or as Yawkey would frame it, tolerance up until the point whereby white people are the only people who aren't allowed tolerance in that sort of sense. And that means that all things must be encompassed by a mindset of inclusion, diversity, and again, pluralism. They will all be multiracial, multi-ethnic, multicultural. Everything must be that way.
Yes, it's, again, I was quite struck by this. Timed to Human Rights Day, the Lancet special issue advancing racial and ethnic equity in science, medical, and global health. And their cover quote, which I've just realized is different from the other quote on some of that other literature, is: racism, xenophobia, and discrimination exist in every modern society, causing avoidable disease and premature death among groups who are often already disadvantaged. Some of it's quite boilerplate, but a lot of it isn't, and we'll get into it. Basically, this is a whole issue of The Lancet, which they have done before, but this is an entire issue of The Lancet based around racism as a public health crisis, with all the literature that's added up in, you know, supposedly respected peer-reviewed journals talking about the fact that racism is quite literally some form of disease.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back and forth between like how literal it is in some places and how figurative it is, but ultimately the December 10th, 2022, volume 100, number 10368. But this is the December 10th kind of issue of the current issue of The Lancet at the time.
Which, for those who aren't aware, is maybe something akin like the American equivalent of the British Medical Journal.
Yes. The Lancet is supposed to be the premier medical journal. It is supposed to be both a journal for publishing and kind of a curation service that puts out these editorials.
I know we aren't going to look at specific elements of studies in here, but we could very much apply the same rules as we did about the replication crisis.
Yes.
Too much of the information will back these studies, you know, the classics being things like implicit racial bias and white people is more prevalent than it is in brown folk. the notion that well, because you are economically disadvantaged, you are more likely to commit crime, which is actually a falsehood. And if you disaggregate across ethnicities and wealth, you find that poor whites commit less crime than rich blacks.
Yes. John Tron was in fact right about that. which is it's one of the more famous supposed like fail quotes in that, but it's true. It's completely borne out if you do believe the statistics. Which we are supposed to do in some cases, not enough. But let's just have a look at some of the titles here then. Because I'll zoom in a little bit so I can actually read them. The editorial we're going to read is called Advancing Racial and Ethnic Equity in Health. The articles it contains is kind of the body are Race, Ethnicity, and Ill Health, Making the Non-Modifiable Modifiable. Racial Disparities in Physician Decision-Making for Primary Brain Tumors. Indigenous Health in Brazil from Vulnerable to Protagonist. Urgent call to address interpersonal and structural racism and social inequalities in Australia. As you can tell just by the titles, these are mostly what we would now consider social science papers.
Mm.
They are not like that. Maybe the brain tumor one has some hard medicine in there, but probably very. It's all
the
tangential.
Idea that people are dealing with chemical science is completely out of the. There's just none of this has anything to do with that.
Yeah. How can research funders advance racial equity? It is very, very nakedly about politics, and it only gets more nakedly about politics as you actually read it.
I did notice the one towards the bottom there was one about the trust gap.
Yeah.
Some sort of ethnic trust gap, so there's more you know, modern globalist language that we're used to nowadays being settled into this issue.
Golombini, you also mentioned the BMJ, which I'll go over later. But this is the opening editorial of this issue of the line. It says, in quotes, "Racism is a public health emergency of global concern. Since we wrote these words in June 2020, and we'll go over that issue as well later, a monumental worldwide reckoning with racism, xenophobia, and discrimination in society, its roots, its consequences, and its redress has gathered pace. Marches have taken place, and statues have been toppled. Activists galvanized, and institutions investigated, reforms proposed, and elections contested. Progress has been uneven, but interrogation of the power structures that prejudice and mistreat specific groups of people while privileging others has heightened to acknowledgement of racism and its harms. Hatred, intolerance, and discrimination kill. These issues are as pervasive in medicine, medical science, and global health as in society. Today, The Lancet publishes a special issue bringing together the strongest evidence and analysis on advancing racial and ethnic equity in science, medicine, and our health." It's just amazing that you have The Lancet here basically advocating for iconoclasm.
Yeah, I mean, I want to go back to that first sentence and quotes there. "Racism is a public health emergency of global concern."
Yes.
It's the ultimate word salad. It is the complete and utter apex of what the logic of equality and pluralism gets you to.
Yes.
Once you solve the problem of internal domestic political discrimination, you then have to solve the problem of like internal domestic discrimination of all forms.
Yes.
And then, well, to keep going on, you have to then deal with all forms of discrimination, be they political, social, material, or in this terms, health. And then once you've solved them all in your country, it would be discriminatory, of course, not to then go solve other problems elsewhere of the same vein.
It's interesting, again, The Lancet has, as much as I hate to just point out the contradiction, a self-defeating thing here, in which there was a special issue of The Lancet talking about racial equity. Within it, talking about the fact that there's a lack of discussion and funding for research into racial equity. It's kind of funny, but we're past that. Well, if it didn't exist, why are they publishing it? Why is it fun?
But what if the oil can had its own greasy wheels or squeaky wheels? Sorry.
Yeah, basically. It's very self-perpetuating engine, but I'd like to think we're slightly past just pointing that stuff out. But yeah, that opening sentence there, as given, it's taken as given.
Mm.
It's not, you know, there's no marketplace of ideas. There's no debate about whether racism is a public health emergency. It's so far along that you can't really, within the medical sphere, contest it.
No.
It is the settled science, to use an overused parlance.
But yeah, it's the step before we have justifications in British media of why. Don't be worried about the fact that when you go to your GP, one of the doctors there is performing voodoo on your granddad that's terminally ill. That would be racist to say that sort of medicine doesn't work. You can't go and do that. That's culturally insensitive.
Well, the next bit is great here, because they say, first, racism, xenophobia, and discrimination are fundamental determinants of health globally. The misclassification of race as biological rather than social construct continues to compound health disparities.
My God.
So that they're just like, they're denying some of their own health policies.
Well, the biology is not true. Yeah. Anyone can be a doctor.
Well, the whole thing is that they go into this about like tailoring health approaches to indigenous people of special health needs because of their biological race.
No, it's only it's socialization around the consumption of bread products that gives Jewish people celiac disease.
Yeah,
it's social factors that mean black people can't drink milk and get sickle cell.
Yeah, it's sickle cell is a social construct. You know, I don't know, cancel the swimming lessons, blah blah blah. But Some of you will get that. It's great. It's great. Four research papers show how discrimination leads to poor health outcomes. Again, a lot of this is just waffle. They talk about Black, Hispanic, and South Asian women, Australian, Aboriginals.
Well, no, I'm looking here. In a study of over 2 million pregnancies across 20 high-income and middle-income countries, neonatal death, stillbirth, and preterm delivery were more likely among babies born to Black, Hispanic, and South Asian women. The women more likely to abuse alcohol, drugs, tobacco, have health problems downstairs in general.
Because be obese as well.
Be obese. And also no mention of abortion.
No mention of abortion. Also, this
or never mind the fact that, what is it, like 40% of, or is it nearly 60% of African-American women have sexual experiences before age 13? I'm sure that makes them perfectly healthy for carrying through in terms of pregnancy.
Well, the issue here as well is also this is on a global scale.
Yes.
So it's they're just talking about, like, third world has sick people. Well, third world has infant mortality.
20 high-income and middle-income countries. What if you're talking about third world populations and first world nations.
Yeah. What is a middle-income country? Once you start getting down to, like, what 20 countries are these is the thing.
It's the lower upper fifth percentage of the three-quarters quartile 20 nonsense like that.
Just mental health. you gotta look at these people. Oh yes, Black women and their mental health. But now there's just all kinds of stuff in here. This issue shows how systems intersect to perpetuate inequalities. Racism converges with systems of oppression, including those based on age, gender, and social and economic status, to exacerbate or mitigate experiences of discrimination. This is just like, it's raw neoliberal trying to talk Marxism.
I would actually say it's a bit more insidious than that, because you're getting to the point here where it's similar as the becoming a minority stuff.
Yeah.
Their idea of health here is to the same of integration, where until people who can't ever possibly show the exact same health outcomes as white people show those health outcomes, white people aren't doing enough. So there's always constant cause to go back and reevaluate and redevelop so we can better form our public health infrastructure to combat racism first and foremost, and then we'll get to solving people's
problems. But we'll take you through some of this. We'll take you through how prevalent this narrative is, and then we'll go into, we do have some proper theory stuff to kind of, before we hit the, what I would consider like the ultimate quiet part loud stuff about this. Which is funny, but I just, again, this intro from The Lancet has basically everything. Talking about the core problem is an inequality in power, historically rooted but still operating today. So you're going to medicalize how power inequality and power dynamic in an almost like racial Marxian sense.
Well, yeah, you can't apply medical solutions without first considering whether or not someone was a descendant of a slave.
Anything else here? Joint commitment for action, inclusion, diversity in publishing, blah, blah, blah. Racism is not only about the health of particular persecuted groups, it inflicts a collective trauma on all of us. The positive corollary of this fact is the lessening inequalities and restoring justice can bring about...
Could you scroll up for a moment here?
Yeah. And bring healing to society as a whole.
We expect that papers concerning minority ethnic and discriminated populations include authors who represent those populations and for data to be disaggregated appropriately. Stop perpetuating racist stereotypes and misperceptions of race as a fixed biological construct. We ask authors to avoid use of race-based reference ranges and algorithms, and to qualify race-based associations drawn from observational data by discussing potential limitations and the possible role of unmeasured confounders. So, despite the fact that characterising race in some of these studies might provide results that are different or the other way round, we are not going
to
do it.
Well, I was going to go back to that because it links in with something we have later about the restrictions on use of genetic data. That basically a huge amount of the... Yeah, so they're saying that to reach these conclusions, they have completely hamstrung their authors.
Yes. Would you not remember, we listened to some of the Nudge Unit podcast the other week, within which they were discussing taking sets of data and stripping elements of it out so that the data could be interpreted more equitably by stakeholder parties that had to, for some reason, search through it.
So what they're saying here, literally, is that anything that would counteract the narrative they're putting forward is filtered out by design.
Mm.
You can't just say that there are racial, biological differences between groups and that causes them to have different health outcomes. Even though there are papers within these two series that do actually say that.
Mm.
And they say it in a slightly more roundabout way, but they do. They talk about tailoring health outcomes. And it's just, it's amazing that that's in there because it again, by design, completely hamstrings any outcome that can come from all of these data sets. I don't want to really go through the studies. We don't really have time. You can do that in your own time if you want. All this, again, will be linked in the document. But I wanted to go through the way that they've marketed this. The way they've marketed this is with these kind of two infographics. But I think the biggest, giveaway is this quote here, which they're having as one of their major promotional quotes. You want to read that?
Understanding and challenging discrimination and underlying ideologies is central to public health and the promotion of social equity.
Well, this is really, I think, the best jumping off point for what you were saying, which is racism as an issue here is incidental. It could effectively be anything they're talking about.
Incidental up until the point where you realise that it gives open scope to then bring any other complex of social issues, outcomes economically or politically, all into the same sort of stramash, as it were.
But what does challenging ideologies that are averse to politicising public health and then the associated promotion of equity have to do with medicine?
It's about taking the entire Western canon of literature and throwing it in the bin, or only allowing it to exist so you can reinterpret it through the lens of post-colonial studies, and then in doing so you'll cure cancer?
Well, again, this is a purely political statement. You know, challenging discrimination, its underlying ideologies, and the promotion of social equity. Again, public health even is only an attack vector.
Mm.
It's not a sincere point. It is about attacking ideologies that don't promote social equity in whatever terms they define it as a public health ill, as like a medical ill, as a medical condition, as a disease. And that, I think, is the essence of kind of the therapeutic state stuff. It, through condensing it into like a fag packet quote that they can share on social media, they really can't not say the quiet part loud.
No, they can't.
And it's any... I can't imagine being somebody who's a medical professional witnessing this and not having some kind of concern about your profession. Like, this is why we talk about like the ANAB stuff and like all nurses are bastards, all doctors are bastards. Because they read this. This represents their profession. And if they're not...
Well, you know what they're doing. The vast majority of them are going, well, this doesn't really affect me in the grand scheme of things, because I'm not a decision maker in a hospital or in a health board.
Yeah.
Because I don't have the links to get me into that kind of position. So instead, I just perform, you know, glue some people back together and perform some basic surgery for 25 years and collect a pension.
To steal some leftist rhetoric here, you can't afford to be neutral in a moving train.
No, exactly. You can't afford to be neutral in a moving hospital.
Yeah. And the whole point of that, by not speaking out, they are tacitly supporting this.
Oh no, I would entirely agree with you. I'm just saying it's not that they don't recognise that this is wrong, it's that they don't care enough.
Well,
and are too interested in the economic sort of what they deem to, or at least pretend to be, politically neutral aspects of it.
Well, to hammer this home as well, there's a big infographic about racism, xenophobia, discrimination and health. But these six key principles, none of them have anything to do... Again, none of them have anything to do with medicine.
Excuse me? I think you find they all have something to do with medicine.
Well, six key principles. One, decolonization. So So that's just like pure, raw, anti-European stuff. Two, understanding intersections between multiple axes of discrimination. Intersectionality. Pure, like, I guess what you consider like cultural Marxist theory. Increasing diversity and inclusion. Again, boilerplate policy stuff. Reparative and transformative justice. Reparations and Gibbs.
Yeah.
Active promotion of racial equity and opposing racism. Anti-racism. Human rights-based approaches.
See, wouldn't reparative and transformative justice actively promote equity by opposing racism? Like, what, wouldn't all these things give you the other?
Well, that's kind of the trick here, the kind of belt and braces approaching here. But again, all of this is a medical journal. This is supposedly a serious medical journal.
Stone Toss Cartoon.
Yeah. What does this have to do with medicine? Medicine. It's exceptionally clear that they're getting involved in not only politics, but policy. And health policy going beyond what we would usually consider as health policy. It's health policy as one, social policy, and two, the treatment of social ills. And I hate to break it to you, but those social ills are you and me in this framework. We are being portrayed here as a disease in some sense, which I think is something that people need to keep in mind.
Well, I think there is something to suggest here that this actually starts to go beyond almost the limitations of, you know, as we were saying before, this has nothing to do with hard chemical medical science.
No.
And what you're essentially almost doing is grasping at, you know, virtues in an almost religious sense.
Yes.
You know, it's the greater whole of public health as like some sort of value or structure to be appealed to.
It very much is kind of temple building. It's very priestly class stuff. But we'll kind of get to that a little bit later because I have a Substack piece that deals with that a little bit. But we're getting a little long in the tooth. But I want to kind of cover that bit in detail because this is important to the framework here. But I will take a break quickly before I move on to remind people to do interact with the video.
Yes.
And if you want
leave likes and your comments to summon and appeal the algorithm gods so that our content will not be sacrificed to the algorithm needlessly.
Yeah, yeah. Also, yeah, like I said, if you want stuff to be answered, the best way to do it is via the Streamlabs link, but we do also have Super Chats. We are somehow still monetized. So do ask your questions that way. We do with the chat as well. We're not completely exclusive to kind of paid questions. We always endeavor to answer all of our Super Chats. So the next part of this is something I want to briefly skim over, is that basically a few issues later, this is their current issue. This is their January issue. Is geared towards One Health, which basically is the idea of like a global health system. It's the One World Medical Government. If you ever see One Health mentioned, it's to do with bringing all the social and equity stuff into this unified global health concern industry. But what they do here is they say the exact same things. They talk about ecological equity in place of racial equity, but racial equity is part of it. And again, this is a demonstration that really the issue is partly incidental.
Insofar as, again, it is a vehicle, or at least you've got to pick the best vehicle for extracting power out of any crisis.
The Lancet and the people who are pushing these narratives who are at the apex do not care about racism, they do not care about climate change or ecology. They do not care about equity. They care about power. And the best way to bring about power is to make themselves the brokers of racial equity, the brokers of climate equity. They gain power by brokering these new agreements.
And of course, they have hidden behind one of the very few undemocratic institutions and lenses to do it with.
Yeah.
You don't elect the people on the health board. You do not elect the people on Lancet who dictate medical standards for the next two or three decades. Or, you know, oh, here's how medical ethics now has to reach standards of racism and equity, ecology. You don't get to vote those folk out.
Again, One Health really is here it is. The One Health high-level expert panel defines One Health as an integrated, unifying approach that aims to sustainably balance and optimize the health of people, animals, and ecosystems. It recognizes the health of humans, domestic and wild animals, plants, and the wider environment, including ecosystems, are closely linked and interdependent. So as race is medicalized, so climate change is medicalized.
Or the wider environment, which is, of course,
yeah,
affected by the flux of climate change.
There's a few in here. What is there here? Binary tract cancer, disease control, global investments, optimized health and well-being of children with disabilities. It's all climate change in the prescription pad. Offline, rethinking the world, One Health in Kenya. It's all very, again, social science in supposedly a hard medical context.
Mm.
But this is really them using the same framework, only a month later, really. They have, like, the racism issue and the climate change issues. This isn't, like, a standout. And there's a lot of... There's a feedback loop here, really. As this is suggested by like a supposedly serious journal like The Lancet, you begin to see it in media. Racism poses public health threat to a million worldwide found reports. Discrimination has profound effect on health of disadvantaged people, says Lancet Review. It's information washing.
Information that's more than a month old. So it's not reliable anymore.
The
very 1984.
A lot of... The Guardian's probably the worst for this, but a lot of the quote-unquote establishment media outlets will have these warnings. Because the narrative changes so quickly, and, you know, science isn't wrong. It just learns new things, guys. The science
it's
doesn't change.
It's constantly evolving.
Yeah, yeah. The science just evolved. It wasn't wrong. But a lot of these warnings appear in mainstream media. That's, again, The Guardian makes it most obvious, but I see them constantly because apparently information that's more than a month old within the current environment stops being true because the truth is so malleable. But that's been the case for a long time. People just begin to notice now, so you have to flag this up. Like, oh, this isn't current. But yeah, they are basically just saying the same thing Lancet is, but they're deferring to the Lancet as an authority, and the Lancet is really deferring to, you know, the experience of the indigenous peoples and all of this. But they'll also talk about the fact that the CDC said it, and all the media out there becomes very circular.
Racism, xenophobia, and discrimination are fundamental influences on health globally, but have been overlooked by health researchers, policymakers, and practitioners. The series published in Lancet suggests an accurate and unfounded assumptions about genetic differences between races also continues to shape health outcomes through research, policy, and practice. The review of evidence and studies and found that small sentence on its own there was literally again them saying, actually, if you factor out race as
a causal factor
in any study, it no longer appears, ergo genetic differences aren't real. Racism and xenophobia exist in every modern society and have profound effects on the health of disadvantaged people, said the lead author, Professor Delan Devukumar of University College London.
I think he's in... There's a link from UCL over here, but... Who is this, Del? Hello, sir.
Oh, no.
Will you be answering your phone, sir? I'm not... No, I will not buy your new broadband.
He wants to sell you SIM cards for Colum and Folk in Mumbai for £4.50 an hour.
Do not redeem, yeah. It's, again, it's all the same stuff, but this is how the information washing happens, really. This is how we end up with all of these headlines. But
yeah, the call to action is put out by The Lancet, who are the experts or the technocrats in this situation, and that means that The Guardian and all the other sort of middling writers who need something to write about will all tag along.
Well, we've seen this cycle before. This is essentially a recycled narrative because they're trying to make it catch fire. We originally saw this back in June 2020, but it has happened. There's basically been a headline cycle, journal cycle, and as we'll see, government agency cycle of this every single year since 2020, since it was started.
Well, I
there's almost like racism as a pandemic season.
Yes, but I think as well we've got to remember that this standard, and the one that will be mentioned in the Gottfried sort of sources, that, well, they're seeing here that the racism in the abstract is the problem.
Yeah.
What they really mean is people who are either products of racist societies or perpetuate racist stereotypes themselves are the issue.
Yes.
And it is that their attitude that has to be policed, managed, and therapeutically sort of worked out of them. And that has been a standard that these services have operated off for decades before this stuff.
Yes, it is. This is merely kind of the final formalization of that framework.
It's making it known to the public that this is how it's, these are the standards and this is how it's been.
Yeah, but it's also just like the hint that if somebody is quote unquote racist or is even assuming that biological race exists and is a factor.
But assuming biological race exists is racist, don't you
yes,
know?
Yes, yeah, it's the whole thing of the... anyway, this is from The Lancet, June 11th, 2020. I believe this is the original call to action they were talking about. Racism, the public health crisis we can no longer ignore. This, again, in 2020, the PSYOP full swing, the language here you wouldn't even get away with now.
Amidst videos viral on Twitter of white people being kicked to death all across America during that one summer.
Extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures. We are facing a global pandemic, a climate catastrophe, an imminent recession, and possibly depression.
That should just say exception, exception, exception. We are the sovereign.
Basically, yes. The health of the most vulnerable and all humanity is at stake. This feels like a supervillain speech.
Mm-hmm.
Yet there is nothing new, extraordinary, or unprecedented about racism, xenophobia, and discrimination. The killing of Mr. George Floyd, St. Floyd, on the back of numerous other deaths of Black Americans at the hands of the police, and the 2 to 4 times increased mortality risk from COVID-19 for minority ethnic groups, boy, that failed to materialize in Africa, have brought to light social and structural injustices that have existed for centuries and are derived from the same intersecting systems of oppression.
You see, there's proof of exactly what they're talking about. Black people don't have a genetic difference. When they get COVID in Africa, they're fine, but when they get COVID in white countries, then they have a problem. And that's white people's fault.
The thing is, they're not even clever enough to try that trick. They just embarrassedly don't look at the Africa numbers. When a single act of violence is captured and amplified on social media, much like the televised US civil rights protest of the 60s, don't say that part too loudly, it brings police brutality into the consciousness of people across the world. It elicits a visceral response. Humanity joins together in condemning racism. Again, this is in a medical journal. This is a medical journal. What is this doing in a medical journal?
Why are they trying to integrate cultures that don't work against each other together as if it was something that just requires the right organization of psychologists and doctors?
Again, it's so obvious now. They talk about unprecedented times, unprecedented measures. Like, you're right, exception, exception, exception. But they're really just deferring to the fact that there is was at that point, I guess it still is, saturation level propaganda around both race and the pandemic.
Mm.
So there has to be this confluence where they go into it as the ultimate exception.
It has to be the crossover that no one wanted.
No. There is this intersection of the COVID-19 pandemic and the racism pandemic in which the fusion is that they have more power.
Mm.
And that's always the answer. Again, the answer is always the technocrats, the Lancet, the people above them, their paymasters, the merchants who fund them, all gain more power from this.
Yep.
And if you don't want to give them power, you're racist. And you're not only racist, you're sick. You're sick and need to be medicated. And that is where this narrative goes.
You need to be treated, I believe is the right term.
I love that term. Why is this? People from minoritized ethnic groups. Who's minoritized them?
That's us.
Yeah.
Yeah, cheeky bastards.
It's, again, a lot of the language here crosses over with when we did the Becoming a Minority stream.
Oh, see, there we go. People from minoritized ethnic groups are more likely to work as key workers in frontline jobs. So because we got the immigrants over,
You clap for me now.
we got the immigrants over, then we the people put them in the cheap jobs, and because we the people put them in the cheap jobs, that's our fault.
Apparently, yes. But that's the one from 2020. I don't, again, there's a lot of repeating stuff here, but
It was this bottom one here. Racism kills, and this is a public health crisis we can no longer ignore. As a health community, where were we? As the hashtags disappear and we start to emerge from the pandemic, even in ordinary times, we need extraordinary
the
measures.
infinite exception is what's being called for there. We declare no competing interest.
Power cannot brook an end.
Yes.
In the words of one Nina Pavarotti.
That's the Lancet from 2020 in like the belly of the beast. The Summer of Floyd, I believe, has
Because
peaked.
some of the names here, Delan Devikumar,
He's back
Suja
again.
Sevil Hadjirahadja, Jordan Shannon, Kia Muraya,
Sacha Lashone, that
et
again,
al.
et al. Yeah, show
That
up.
et al bugger, he's naming
Ibrahim
everything.
Ubakakbar. I can see why they didn't put these two up front. Good lord,
Tendies.
Mr. Tendies, please bring us the tendies, Mr. Tendies. Yeah, it's basically all of the weird globalist technocrat foreigners we brought in, going, we are in charge now. Or at least we will tell you where the power comes from and how it's exercised now. But that's the 2021. This is again April 10th, 2021.
Oh, it's Kehinde Andrews.
Yeah, all of these were accompanied by Associated Media blitzes.
Breonna Taylor, woman killed who was actually like, handling a weapon
Yeah.
directly in front of police officers in a threatening manner and a known gang member. Killing her was actually like a positive to the public health, like whole. Cannot argue otherwise in any way that makes
This
sense.
is almost an identical article, though. It's just the 2021 reshuffling and reprogramming, talking about social movements of the 20th century, 60s, blah blah blah. But again, it's just they try this basically every year. But I also just wanted to remind people that the Lancet were also the people who talked about the fact that travel restrictions on China were a violation of international law and racist. So I don't know, maybe the science changed on that one, I don't know. But that's just a funny one that they were so wrong-headed, or at least within their own logical framework, so wrong-headed. Because all of that ultimately was its own psyop. Oh, close off China, it'll kill us all. Yeah, nice work there, people. You really didn't spot what was going on with them foaming the streets and stuff as like a disaster movie. But again, it's just funny them failing within their own framework here.
What you mean to tell me the Chinese government was welding people into their apartment blocks for no good reason?
They wouldn't do
They
that.
would, yeah, they wouldn't just do that to create propaganda for Western governments or anything.
You think the
We
Chinese would?
wouldn't have our own propaganda agencies domestically in these countries now, would we? Surely not.
Well, the whole point is that there is a second and third, well, sorry, a third and fourth wing to all of this. And that we have the Lancet, the medical journals, and medical establishment pushing this narrative. We have the media amplifying it out to the public and the non-journal readers. And then we have the government bodies, mostly US government bodies, though there is a lot of overspill into the UK, as we'll speak about after these. But the CDC declared racism as a public health crisis in the midst of the lockdowns.
I do remember that one.
Yeah. But this is just their whole thing about our impact. Minority health and health equity. That is an entire section of the CDC's website, but they just have a session called Racism and Health. CDC's efforts to address racism are the fundamental driver of health disparities. As this nation's preeminent public health agency, the CDC has a pivotal role to lead our nation in addressing racism and the resulting health inequalities. It's again such a telling paragraph. As this nation's permanent public health, the CDC has a pivotal role to lead our nation in addressing racism. Like, what is. I understand why a lot of like conservative, like boomer conservatives lost their mind here, Because it is, again, just a naked display of power. That the CDC is a wholly political organization. Again, all of this shifts the illusion of neutrality. This is the new neutral. But from the old neutral perspective, this just looks like crazy town.
Yep.
And if you're not, if you do not understand these institutions and these journals were never neutral, all of this is not processable to you. You assume that within the last 5 years they've been taken over by the SJWs.
When actually this is the logical consequence of, you know, nearly a century of operating under pluralistic and progressive social science foundations.
Yeah, they've been like this since before the 60s. Apologies. the Rahman's repeating on me a little bit. But the whole thing here of the CDC, I mean, the CDC rent moratorium was funny enough.
Mm.
But the CDC saying you don't need to pay your rent. The CDC? It's like the whole thing about the consumer protection agencies saying that you can't have a gas stove. All of this alphabet soup is able to exercise immense power when its aims align with that of the wider power structure. And that's how the CDC was able to do this. Again, $300 million to strengthen the work community health workers, $3 billion to support local efforts in COVID-19. It's just them kind of flexing about how much policy they enforce and how much of the narrative they're able to control. But again, the overspill was the media reported this. The CDC director declared racism a serious public health threat. This is from NPR, another essentially public body. Although it's in America, NPR is kind of a joke compared to how the BBC is almost worshipped in Britain, which I always find concerning. But this opens with racism as a scourge in American society. There's also a serious public health threat, according to the director of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. In a statement on Thursday, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, her early life looks like, pointed to the disproportionate impact.
Polish, don't you know?
Yeah, sure. impact of COVID-19 on communities of color, as seen in the case numbers, deaths, and social consequences. Again, it's the folding together of the two big narratives here. But I'm sure most of you will remember when the CDC declared that it was a public health crisis. There was another one, but I don't know. It's all kind of redundant reporting. But that is the exercise of the agencies. I wanted to go over here. The government agencies do have a role in defining this. I will integrate this in a little. I don't know. Have you got any commentary on this? Or
no. There's not really much to add to what the. It's just further examples that all of these unelected institutions tend to be the hub for this stuff, and where it's really put down into process, practice, and reformed into the neutral science.
Yes. The one. Oh no, that just relinks to the same one. Okay, they both leave the same place. That's just the CDC's efforts. That's race and health. Well, the last part of this equation really is the role of the US lawmakers.
Hmm.
This is where it makes it into the explicit policy realm. Oh, better watch out. This article is more than 2 years old.
Oh, that must be really wrong then, if it's that old.
Oh, God, this image. The kneeling black health worker with the Justice for Breonna Taylor with the shower cap on.
Is that
on
like the George Floyd sexual pride colours?
Basically, yeah. Justice for... That's the George Floyd pride flag. I'm calling it now. But that image itself is just hilarious.
See the images as well of him against the wall? Because it's in slightly funny colours and looks a bit deep-fried. It just makes me want to laugh like I can.
I was considering making this the thumbnail, but it was too busy, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's a bit too busy for a thumbnail, but as an insert image, it's just whole. It's like a parody painting. This almost feels like a... who's the guy who did a cancer called?
David Dees.
It's almost like David Dees. Like the health worker with the black power fist.
This is the Marcuse nurse.
Yeah, yeah.
This is exactly what I was thought about a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, dear. Floyd Pride. Yes, thank you, James Murray. But this is... I can't... I, I'll get off the image. Long overdue. Lawmakers declare racism a public health emergency. From, again, June 2020. This all happened in confluence. It's kind of amazing, that, isn't it? The Lancet, media, and the lawmakers all decide all at once that racism is a public... That must make it true. Otherwise, you know, there's collusion there. There's collusion within a class of people.
The third paragraph here.
Yes.
These declarations are long overdue, said Dr. Alison Agwu, an infectious disease specialist and associate professor at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. So she's an infectious disease specialist, and ergo our knowledge, of course, of social sciences, which specialties are.
Yeah. she's a racism specialist.
Doctor, yeah. As a physician on the front lines of the coronavirus pandemic, Agwu said she had been amazed at how quickly the medical establishment mobilized to develop diagnostic tests and produced thousands of research papers seeking a treatment and a vaccine. The government commit this same sort of resources and funds to addressing issues of systemic racism, Agwu said. That's a start. It's the war on racism. Woo!
Yeah, but, well, it's also implied that the same measures should and could be used against
it. But if the rules apply, war on drugs equals more drugs.
Yeah.
War on poverty equals more poverty.
Yeah.
War on obesity equals more obesity. If the war on racism is happening, then we're in for it.
We finna get those stacks.
Yeah, we're gonna get the checks.
And not just
they're gonna need racists.
They're gonna need.
I mean, they're not just gonna pretend there aren't any racist people out there now, are they?
It's like professional street nigga, scrub monkey, professional racist. I hope that can be true. That's what I aspire to be, a professional racist.
See, that's why we're really just annoyed at the feds online who pretend to be right-wing. Because they get to be racist, they get paid for it, and they don't get in
What's
trouble.
What's this? Blacks, the residents are black, have the highest rates of lead poisoning.
Yeah, black infants are nearly 3 times as likely to die as white infants. Yeah, because they all get aborted.
Even as an elected official, when I'm driving, when the police drive up behind me, I feel a sense of nervousness come over me. What are you doing? That's Bashir Jones, a Cleveland council member who introduced legislation declaring racism as a health crisis.
The trauma of seeing your children, your sons, your daughters, your wives being killed in living colour, that kind of stress also plays a part. And the ailments that affect our bodies.
I'm ill because you put, yeah. Is that Comic Sans? Is that I Can't Breathe in Comic Sans?
No, I don't see that. You better scroll past that.
It's in Comic Sans. Yeah, we created propaganda that made us anxious. And now, because we're anxious because of our own propaganda, you need to treat us for it. That's great. That's like a perpetual motion machine. Again, very... We'll get into some of the theory stuff in a bit, but very very therapeutic state, very self-fulfilling therapeutic state. I'm going to go over too much of this, but I wanted to show you the scale of this, because this is a website called Alpha Public Health Association for science, for action, for health.
Is the little thing up there with the different colours, is that a UN Sustainable Development Goals motif?
I believe it is, yes. Yes, it is. I did check that. But they talk about racism is a public health crisis. Across the country, local and state leaders are declaring racism a public health crisis or emergency. These declarations are an important first step to advocating racial equity and justice. It must be followed by allocation of resources and strategies. Racism declarations, opportunities for action. They go into basically talking about the fact that on a state level, on a county level, on a city level, that there have been declarations of racism as a public health crisis in the majority of US states at some level.
See, why can't we just have like a race amnesty? We had COVID amnesty. Yeah. Where's the racism amnesty?
Let's look at Alaska, the least population dense state, I believe. There is a Alpha 2021 Reconciliation. Racism as a public health crisis in Alaska, and that is a Alaskan Public Health Association. It's the red states are not immune from this. Let's have a look. In Florida, even. In Florida, there have been 3 declarations of racism as a public health crisis. So the city of St. Petersburg has declared a public health crisis. The Hillsborough County Board of Commissioners has. And the Manatee County Board of Commissioners also declared a crisis. So you really, again, it's almost like an example of the local tyranny stuff we talked about. Even if your state-level government is not on board with this, your local governments will be, and they'll be able to force that issue on a large level. North Carolina, 11 declarations.
And surely no one's got more than, like, Wisconsin. I would expect that to be, like, the center of this stuff. Because
Ohio, 32.
Oh, brilliant.
Where is Wisconsin? Only got 4th. How has Ohio got
Cleveland.
Yeah, okay. But it's just like, apparently every, like a lot of city councils. Athens.
No, it's
council.
Just Cleveland. Yeah. It's just Cleveland. It's such a shithole. That's why.
Okay, I mean, it's a lot of this seemed to be city council stuff. City council. Village of Yellow Springs. Oh, God. Michigan, 20 declarations. Wisconsin, 14 declarations. Governors, I think California obviously has. California just about pips Ohio with 36 declarations. You think they'd be falling over themselves more, but let's have a look at, okay, public health entity. Let's take away town and city council. Education entity, state legislature.
Well, yeah, of course, because the school boards will probably have their own public health sort of ethics.
Yeah, California Directors of Public Nursing. Governor, mayoral statement. County board. Oh, what is other? County association. California County Government Association. We zoom out, though, it's Washington. All their public health boards seem to have been the ones to declare that racism was a pandemic there. So it's almost, if you have infiltration, in quotes, at any level within your public structure, which is very, again, the majority of U.S. states, if we turn all of them back on, have some kind of declaration that racism is a public health crisis. Mm-hmm. I mean, Texas has 4. Dallas, Harris County, San Antonio, and Austin. Austin isn't really Texas, but still. Good old... where is that? Georgia, I believe. Alabama has dodged it, though.
No, it's got 1.
Has it? Where's that? Oh, there it is. Jefferson County Board of Health. But yeah, this is just a demonstration of how widespread this is in America. That basically, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10. I think only 10 states have not had some kind of declaration of racism as a public health crisis, which is insane. That looks like insane. But the fact that you have all of these health boards, these education boards, basically any institution that can declare racism a public health crisis on a state level in the US where possible has done. And that should be something that people pay attention to. It has become so prevalent. It's also bled over to the UK. Here we have Green Templeton College, which is a part of the University of Oxford. Racism as a public health crisis. Oh, God, there's like a video here.
It's some terrible Zoom chat.
Some Zoom chat with like mid-mutt women. But it's the fact that this has spilled over here. As always, what happens, you end up with the American contagion. Because as we always talk about, America is the great Satan.
I mean, we're all connected by the consortium of the WHO and the UN these days anyway. It's called human rights mandates for a lot of this stuff. Be derived from as well.
Well, we haven't. I've had a look, and we haven't. We've seen bits of it, and we've seen some boilerplate stuff. But it's very difficult for someone like the WHO to talk about racism as a public health crisis on a global level because they have, again, so many third world, second world. They've got to balance China, and that stuff doesn't really apply there. As in that they don't really have the propaganda.
Not until they come up with some form of infrastructure for actually engaging in.
Yeah.
Reparations that I was just talking about.
I believe the climate declaration.
Shall we say, correcting historical discriminatory inequitabilities of the phrases.
Climate justice seems to be the biggest internationalist effort.
Yes.
In terms of racism and discrimination as a public health crisis, or rich-poor country inequality. But that's possibly a different stream for a different day.
Yes.
Because climate change is a public health crisis, is a whole other topic with a whole lot of other literature, which is a lot of this stuff we've seen is national and local, which is where they've kept it, because a lot of these racial grievances are specifically national, as in the racial grievance structure in America, Britain, and Europe is relatively similar, but it's not similar to the way it is in, say, China or large parts of Africa. They have their own racial and tribal grievance structure, which will mean that they have to have that on more of a local level, whereas the climate stuff is so generalized and so abstracted in many ways, it can be applied universally, which is what they're doing. So I will say that this is actually the nationalized approach almost. It's not. It is globalized and it's been declared a global health crisis, but only from a Western perspective.
This wouldn't work if the nations you were doing it in were not predominantly white or historically predominantly white, because the whole institutions of public health and the possibility that they're inequitable must come from the fact that they were at some point white controlled.
A panel of experts of colour in medicine and in public health from the UK and US discuss racism's historic and pervasive effects on population health and how racist structures embedded into social systems and medical practice can be remedied. It's exactly the same stuff. It talks about the CDC, it talks about the UK and US, it talks about COVID-19. All these people, you know, Chicago School of Medicine, Multicultural Affairs at the University of Chicago. You're mixing the disciplines here, though. They have abandoned the hard medical and are very much erring on the social science side of it. Nobody particularly seems to care. NHS people, BAME workers in the NHS are less likely to be promoted, more likely to be in frontline roles, blah, blah, blah. It's exactly the same narrative, but this is... Again, it's in Oxford, which is part of the British educational establishment, and it is spilling over into a copy and pasting into British policy. We also have here the British Medical Journal. Racism, the other pandemic. It's almost like the other white meat. Again.
From June 2020.
Again, 11th of June 2020.
Basically to the day.
It's the same declaration on the same day from all these people. The 11th of June 2020. It, to coincide with June, you know, to get towards Juneteenth, as they call it now. Racism is suddenly and at last everyone's business.
Yeah, tell me about it.
And acting against it is everyone's responsibility. More so at this time than ever, we now realize since we cannot tackle COVID-19 unless we tackle racism. Now, this is
hilarious.
This might actually be worse than the Lancet one. That is hilarious. This realization may be less obvious to some who are seeing the global outpouring of grief and anger at the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis as either a distraction from an in conflict with efforts to contain the virus.
Oh, no, let's go right to the racism is a public health issue because it kills people. It is the underlying driver that puts people from ethnic minority groups at the centre of the pandemic. It is a cofactor for COVID-19 and a key social determinant of health. It's people from ethnic minority groups at the centre of the pandemic. So because the organisers of society put all the brown people in the menial jobs, it's now our fault.
Yes.
I mean, they're actually almost basically making that point there, but blaming us for it.
A missed opportunity,
says Parth Patel. Colleagues Zubaida Haque and colleagues are dismayed that the government has effectively discovered who's dying from COVID-19 strategy or recommendations as to what to do about it. COVID-19 has produced a stress test for structural racism in healthcare and public health. It's crucial to scrutinise the causes of health and social care inequality to reduce the risk of further infections and death.
Again, a lot of it is copy and paste, the same. Picked up by five news. Again, this allometric thing's pretty good because it shows.
I'm just, as the notion here that racism comes first and foremost to solving public health crises in terms of infectious disease, and that infectious disease cannot be understood, that a prerequisite understanding of racial disparities.
Well, this is the Imperial College London one, and this is where I stole the thumbnail from.
Mm.
Because it's actually quite a nicely framed image. And it also kind of makes the point. It's got the BLM. Racism is a pandemic too. Ah, the intersectionality of fake crises. How wonderful. Two intersecting pandemics. This is, I think, the most explicit with that. How COVID-19 is laying bare structural racism and what we can do about it. By Anjaja Ahuja. Is this another Halosa looking? Oh dear. Oh dear, it's have they just cloned? That's like,
it's Suella Braverman.
It's Suella Braverman.
Hey, what's she doing writing pieces on intersection between pandemics? Doesn't she have Holocaust survivors to be berated by?
It's every mid Brahmin class Indian woman ever. They are exactly the same people. I think I accidentally I do. Oh, there we go. But again, how it began. It was in April 2020 that medics started noticing that COVID-19 was not an indiscriminate killer. Oh, the narrative way they're doing this. The first 10 doctors to die in the UK from the novel respiratory disease were all among ethnic minority communities.
That's such a shame, because if we'd won in Ukraine before now, that wouldn't have happened.
The pattern was reported in the British Medical Journal by Professor Kamlesh Kuti at the University of Leicestershire, and noted the pattern might have emerged because the UK was the first ethnically diverse country to experience
surge. No, I'm sorry, his name is Kamlesh Kuti.
The first ethnically diverse country to experience surge. So you're saying that the cure for these racial disparities is homogenous societies? Curious.
Yeah, let's disaggregate one of the factors they're talking about here by just not having white and brown people mix.
Wait a minute, don't homogenous societies have poor people? Why didn't this pattern bear out in the... It's almost like these people are genetically different and have factors beyond the social weapon. It's funny that. That's almost like them torpedoing it at the first hurdle.
Yeah.
That's them trying a bit too hard. Percentage of the population. We've seen that this isn't true.
Yes.
The census has shown that that's about double. God, that's funny. Percentage of UK. Maybe this is just them admitting that there's more of them here than they thought.
Well, this is something I've said a number of times. If you look at NHS immunisation numbers, there's like upwards of 85 million people in Britain as of like 2018. That's probably close to about 100 now, I reckon.
Yes. No, the figures of hospital admissions and...
National insurance numbers.
National insurance numbers. All of this leads us to a conclusion that the numbers we are given are not true, especially when it comes to the amount of ethnic minority and recent arrival people. So this might just be a bookkeeping error, as it were, in the number of brown people in Britain. I don't know, that seems about right. that's probably closer to what it actually is. So,
As I said in the stream last week, start thinking about your minority status now.
Sadly, the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic can... Here we go. 70% of frontline health and social care workers who died from COVID-19 are from the BAME community. But I guess they just abandoned the whole "you clap for me now" thing because it actually riled the man on the street up too much. Like that was one of the few things they actually did put back in the box really quickly.
Yeah,
because they realized they'd maybe gone a little bit too quickly. For those of you who don't know, just look up "you clap for me now" after this. It's basically the Captain Phillips, "look at me, I am the health worker now." But literally, they
I am the doctor now.
Look good to me. I am the doctor now. Again, Imperial College London, British Medical Journal. It's all the same narrative, but with kind of a British sheen over it.
And, oh, God, blimey, Governor, there's COVID-19, is racism.
God, of
God. He looks like a nonce. I bet you that computer in this like in shot has kiddie porn on it.
That is, he has got extreme nonce physiognomy. Thank you, Mr. Majid, for telling me that me as a British person am racist. Is the biggest factor for influence the likelihood of illness and death?
See, this is so vindicating to me though, because what this says was that not only was my behaviour during the pandemic when I walked about, not wearing a mask, not using alcohol hand gel all the time, not 2 meters distancing, not only was I destroying public health infrastructure, I was also being racist at the same time.
Yeah, well, all this shows is that black people couldn't follow simple lockdown instructions. But there's, you know, there's another narrative here.
Well, they just don't wash their hands, they're dirty, and they don't care of themselves.
As I always say, you could, all of the propaganda we're given could be quote-unquote British fascism with very little change. And that you could be writing this about the fact that black people didn't obey the lockdowns and so died at greater numbers and had greater numbers of infection because they don't respect British culture.
Put unnecessary white Brits at risk, yeah, by their irresponsible behaviour.
The, it's like the Richard Spencer get vaccinated stuff. Get vaccinated to save the white...
blacks get vaxxed.
Yeah. Get vaccinated to save the white race stuff. You could actually market it from that angle with very little modification. And again, that's why we keep banging on the ideology doesn't matter that much.
Yeah, drunk. I know, I did. There was a point at which, when they were talking about prioritising the vaccine for BAME people, I was like, oh, are they now?
Maybe we can have a little eugenics as a treat. But that's, like I said, you could like shot reverse shot this with a functionally or at least veneered fascist Britain in quotes, and it would be identical. Again, that's why on this channel, I hate to disappoint some of you, we are not actually like 1930s fascists.
We're so much cooler than
that. I hate to say it, but it's true, guys. We're not actually Nazis for real, guys.
We really are anti-modernists.
Yes, we actually are what we say we do believe. But before we go into kind of the final 15 minutes and a quick theory section, and then a quick wrap up with the last article we've got here. I did want to bring up some of the stuff that I did that I guess didn't predict it, because it does come after some of this stuff. But the Technocrats piece on the Substack, our Anti-Politics Substack. Again, go over, do subscribe, do read our written work. But that very much talks about the health outcomes, the priestly class, the cult of the essential worker. There's a great "I am an essential worker" clip from Schindler's List,
yep,
which is great, of them like setting up checkpoints and only letting essential workers through. Who would do such a thing? who would do such a thing? How terrible. But yeah, there's some good quotes there from Liberty or Equality, but I would just encourage people to go and read that if they want more background on how this works with of the existing framework of technocracy. There's a lot of confluence there. And since a lot of people weren't here when I said it, we do have the video, our therapeutic state video. You can, yes, probably search that out pretty easily. And it will be linked in the stream notes. That also is a good piece of background. But you have here, and if you want to, and we'll take it in turns maybe reading, and we have some excerpts here. Let me have a quick look at the document to make sure I've not missed anything. All that we've seen so far is a very extremely clear example of the political and medical acting in perfect unison to generate kind of what would be referred to as like therapeutic state outcomes or conditions. This is really the theory behind that. This is Paul Gottfried in
After Liberalism.
Yeah, and this is to do with the intersection of the therapeutic state and how democracies and liberalism work when it comes to, well, essentially medicalizing and regulating and publicizing all of these things.
It will speak for itself.
Yes.
Throughout this century, but most noticeably in the last 50 years, this book argues, democratic practice has entailed less and less vigorous self-government while becoming progressively dissociated from any specific cultural or ethnic heritage. Democratic citizenship has come to mean eligibility for social services and welfare benefits. It also imposes varying degrees of loyalty to what Jürgen Habermas calls constitutional patriotism. The acceptance of legal procedures and of democratic socialization, presumably to be carried out by social experts, liberalism has also lost any meaningful connection to what it once signified. By now, it is hard to find in contemporary liberal thinking much of what it stood for at the beginning of the century, save for talk about expressive and lifestyle freedoms, freedoms that 19th century liberals might have had trouble in any case recognising rights. Our own liberal statements are no longer centred on the merits of distributed powers, the need to protect traditional civil society from an encroaching state, or bourgeois moral standards. I believe the next paragraph is this.
Yes, there is.
Today's liberal democracies express and accommodate other political concerns, from the need for entitlements to the combating of prejudice and the privileging by courts of lifestyle rights of designated minorities. In Europe, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, governments have performed these tasks even more energetically than the United States. There, public administrations control incomes more directly, tax more heavily, and together with courts, impose criminal punishments on those whose speech writing offends ethnic minorities. Through this form of democratic governing leaves little to popular consent. It has enjoyed continuing popular support, whence the vexing problem for traditionalist and populist opponents of the current welfare state. They simply cannot convince a majority of people that those who provide, however ineptly, for their material needs are the enemies of democratic self-rule or are interfering unduly in family life. If people care little about such matters and are devoted to the present centralised system of social services, traditionalist and old-fashioned liberal or democratic arguments will not win the day. In this respect, the political debate may already be over, despite the echo of populist rumblings in Europe.
I didn't cut the last bit off, did I? That's not right.
No, that's alright.
Next one.
And it's just a little quote here, which I think is a great little summation. The danger to democracy is that the spirit of deal-making dominates the entire sphere of government, to the extent that all groups receive consideration, even groups who care little about the rules needed to sustain society, even groups of spongers, wreckers and whiners. Every corporate objection is welcomed with a diplomatic smile and a show of goodwill. Every angry protester is someone who must be appeased in the name of consensus by being tossed at least a tidbit. In the world of corporate pluralism, no rascal is ever thrown out on his ear.
That's great. That's almost like a great just quote about the summer of Floyd, but it was written many years ago. God, who's that actual quote from?
Hey, I believe that's from
Sigmund Nag?
Yes, talking about, I think it's some of the Swedish guys that were against early progressivism at that point. But there's some great stuff in that book after liberalism. His further points about the fact that you have this building complex of progressive, liberal and pluralistic social ideals build up to essentially like the UNESCO World Charter that everyone has the human right to sound mental health.
Yes.
And that through that you must expunge every person in every society of all prejudice and bias. Otherwise you can't reach that goal.
Well, we're seeing the functionaries of that now. That's what a lot of the racism of the public health crisis is. It is the functionary of expunging the racist thought in society, of medicating and legislating in a way, of effectively medicalizing and legislating the inside of people's minds.
Yep.
And that you cannot be an intelligent, critically thinking person, I hate to say those words, read all of this framework and not realize that that's what it's saying or where it's going. And the problem is a lot of people do know that's what it's saying and where it's going. And they agree with that. Or they understand how that will empower them.
Mm.
There are, again, there are a section of true believers and there are a section of Machiavellians.
Yes.
When it comes to this. You must learn which is which. I believe many of the mid-level functionaries are nominally believers, or at least in some sense, but I believe that the top end...
They have drunk at least enough of the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. But I believe that a lot of the middle, kind of the upper mid, and especially the apex, the proper elite level people, understand that this is bullshit completely. Mm-hmm. They are self-aware in their Machiavellian nature. And if they're not, they're kept around to be a patsy to be used later.
Yeah, when someone has to take the blame for all this crap.
Yes. But what I wanted to finish on, and I think possibly one of the... who this is, actually. About the AAMC...
American Medicine Academic Community or something like that?
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out who this... Association of American Medical Colleges. That's who it is. This is from... Again, supposedly a very serious student resource website from a respected American association.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's cut to the chase. The cure for racism, of course, is segregation.
we'll see what they posit here, but I think this is as close as they'll get to actually like talking about boxcarring people in language,
yes.
At least now. Is there a cure for racism? Celebrated anti-racist activist and author Ibrahim X. Kendi says, yes, there is. From cancer to COVID-19, people of color suffer from the impact of racism. Yeah. Kendi calls for institutional leaders to look inward and get to the root of the problem. It's the same talking points, but they're kind of abandoning a little bit of Martin Bailey here, and they're talking directly about a cure for racism. The cancer he refers to is a metaphor for racism and the racist policies.
What is going on with these Kendi folk and their genes? 2013, his wife, a pediatrician, was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer at 34, and less than 5 years later, Kendi himself was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic colon cancer at age 35.
They're not asbestos miners.
What are you doing in your colon?
Oh, dear.
Oh, boy, what are you doing?
The whole thing is that these people as well are like elites. He's speaking at the University of Vermont for the Martin Luther King Jr. celebration. He's not someone
Ronald Reagan's favorite day, mind you.
Yeah, he's not someone in an actual ghetto eating lead paint chips. He's part of the
That's why he has cancer and they don't.
it's taken all the cancer out of their body, yeah. But for Kendi, who has become a leading voice in systematic racism in America, cancer is more than a metaphor. It's a personal reality, and he talks about that stuff. The link between racism and health has been laid bare this year, as Kendi and his team at Boston University have tracked the racial breakdown behind COVID-19. Again, it is a anti-racist activist being posited as a medical expert within a medical setting.
So let's cut to the chase. What's the cure?
But is there a cure for racism? Kendi will have a candid discussion, blah, 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 blah. Kendi spoke with AAMC News about his thoughts on systemic racism, healthcare, are connected with, goes into it, diagnosed with cancer, policies, government. I just want to skip to the end here, really. Because he kind of waffles around for a long time. It says, is there a cure for racism? If so, what is it?
I define racism with an M. Oh, he can't spell. That's so funny.
Yeah.
As a powerful collection of racist policies that are leading to racial inequality that are substantiated by racist ideas of racial hierarchy. Is there a cure for racism? There is. It's anti-racism. So if you have an institution that is governed by policies that are leading to racial inequalities, then the people in institutions believe that, for instance, white people are smarter, then they're not going to see it as a problem and white people are in the most senior positions. The same institution can eliminate those policies, can replace them with anti-racist policies that are leading to racial equality. There could be white people in senior positions and people of color in senior positions, and there's equity there, and people would view that as normal. So anti-racism is the cure for racism, i.e. eradicate all white people off the face of the earth.
It's also like a fuck you, pay me as well. It's just like, well, there's like a step here. It's like, well, these people are in charge of these organizations. They might have built these organizations themselves. These people need to be removed from these organizations and replaced with people with diametrically opposed views.
Hmm.
It's the question mark, question mark, question mark process.
Well, it's the unspoken part as well, which is the of course, the only logical conclusion you can take from the fact that there are more white people in positions of power than there are black people is because those white people believe they're better.
Well, to wrap up the stream, really, I would say we've demonstrated quite conclusively the lack of neutrality in health. If people, I don't think people really needed that, but I guess this is a good resource of if people were looking for a place to start for somebody else. We try and make these a bit more beginner friendly, but it's very, you see bits of it, but when it's all hung together like this, you see that the political function, the social policy, and the, you know, the health institution are the
science.
Yeah, the science. It's all part of the same thing, and it's all part of the same structure. Again, we, in a Marxist sense, yes. In like a Marxist power analysis sense, yes. I think we're one of the few people who are not embarrassed about saying that, because that's a little piece of what they try and use here. They try and turn that and be like, structurally racist society, therefore we need to start injecting people with experimental anti-racist drugs.
Yeah.
Because that like the idea of racism as a figurative pandemic, it gets muddled here. It gets muddled when they talk about curing racism as a literal pandemic. And when you start medicalizing people for belief and pathologizing them as one of the biggest kind of founding cornerstones of the therapeutic state is, that people who have the wrong belief are sick, there is something wrong with them, and they need to be medicated and given a therapeutic in some way, be that a social therapeutic or a literal therapeutic. That is the framework of the therapeutic state. You can see it very, very raw in the racism as a pandemic framework. Very deliberately, I think that they're trying to take it from an implicit thing. We need to talk about denazification at some point on the stream. We'll have to do our kind of Frankfurt School stuff properly at some point. But in kind of an implicit way that stuff was, or at least in a public sense, behind closed doors, they weren't. They were saying it very loudly behind closed doors. Mm. But now we are seeing it in an explicit sense in the media, in public, shouted from the rooftops. And this isn't coming out of nowhere. This has been policy, really, for almost the last 100 years in some places, at least since, you know, 1945 in large parts of the West. But we're now seeing it break cover very dramatically. And a lot of this as well is supposed to, again, as we talk about, rile people up. There's a large part of agitation here.
Yeah.
There's also a deliberate surface level examination from what is supposed to be the alternative press and, you know, the conservative media, where they just fold this into the background noise of clown world. They see this as, oh, the wacky left doing wacky things. Look at the silly things they believe. And they are incapable of doing the proper power analysis behind it. They do not know like the deep magics that are being used against them here.
Yeah, it is the conservatives who sort of go, oh, haha, shoe on the other foot. This is funny. This is silly. This is so stupid. They're incompetent. Yeah. Don't they know this is wrong? Who're actually doing the best job at defanging how powerful some of this stuff actually is?
And again, the most important and powerful takeaways from this is that this framework is not genuine.
No.
As you can tell by the tortured language, the word salad, and the mental gymnastics, they do not genuinely believe that racism is a public health crisis. But framing it as such allows them to take the actions that they want to take in terms of policy. And that is the important part here. Anyway, is there anything else we need to shill? I think we've shilled stuff in a midpoint throughout the stream, so I don't think there's much else we need to do.
Yeah, go check the Substack. If you don't already, you can find us on Telegram. It's probably the main place to follow, where we'll announce new things, doing streams, general posts on the odd occasion, which we try not to do too much, for being on social media just seems like a complete and utter waste of time the more and more I do it.
Yep.
Other than that, I don't think we have much to shill. Hope everyone's enjoyed the stream this evening.
As do I. Thank you guys and have a good evening.